Welcome to The Lovumentary, a podcast dedicated to finding out the truth behind what creates deeply passionate, connected, lasting love. In every episode, I sit down with one of the most amazing couples, love experts, or authors in the country and discuss the nitty-gritty details of what really happens inside the most incredible relationships. We dive into the good times and the bad, the sickness and the health, the richer and the poorer, and how each couple has created their own version of true love. My hope is that you take something from every single one of these stories that can help you love more fully and passionately. I'm your host, Nate Bagley, and thanks so much for tuning in. Hey, everybody. This is Nate, and you're listening to another episode of The Lovumentary, and I'm sitting next to Mark, who's helping me edit this podcast. Say hi to Mark, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
I mean, Mark, say hi to everybody. You guys, if you even said hello to Mark, he wouldn't hear you because this is a recording. So Mark has been generous enough to help. You can laugh out loud, dude. They know you're here. Mark has been generous enough to be helping me out with some of these recordings. He's a great guy. If you all have a podcast that you need help with, let me know and I'll connect you with him because he's doing awesome things in the podcast world right now. He's going to be launching his own really soon. Anyway, that's a segue. Back to the intro. This week's episode is with Mike and Becky. And Mike and Becky were a really interesting couple to interview because they just seemed so incredibly lovely all of the time to each other. Like, I think the worst thing the biggest struggle that they've really faced recently in their marriage is that Mark doesn't come to dinner very quickly Mike doesn't come to dinner super quickly when his wife finishes cooking, and then he has to eat a cold dinner, and that kind of upsets her a little bit. And I just thought that was amazing that you could get to the point in a relationship where, like, the biggest conflict that you have is literally over the warmth of your dinner food. So they've obviously done a lot of work and built this really strong relationship to a point where, you know, there's just not a lot of conflict and they just really, really love spending time together. So I hope you enjoy listening to their episode, and I hope that you come back and listen to another one next week, because honestly, there's not an episode or a conversation that I haven't learned something from here. So I hope you guys are getting something. I would love to hear from you also. If you shoot me an email at loveumentary@gmail.com, I just want to hear what you guys think of the podcast. So that's all. Hope you enjoyed the episode, and I'll talk to you guys next week.
It was one of those, yeah, must do classes. So wasn't we want to do that anyway. I was sitting in first day of class and I saw Becky come in the door, and I was sitting next to a buddy of mine, and we were kind of checking out the girls as they're coming in, and I says, "Ah, she's cute." I says, "Yeah." So after the class let out, there was a building where you go opposite ways on the staircase. Mm. So I wanted to make it as happenstance as possible. So I just kind of like bumped into her and struck up a conversation and walked her home. And
well, almost home.
Yeah, almost home.
His dorm was close to mine.
Yeah, so it just happened that we were going the same direction. So it was kind of love at first sight for me. So it all worked out.
What were you thinking the whole time this is happening?
Well, I was oblivious to the fact that he kind of bumped up right at the same time. And he was just, I think he asked me if I was going to the basketball game. And I said no. And we had a nice little talk. And he was from Portland. I was from Portland. We found that out. And at that point, did you ask me then if I wanted to go home?
I said,
home?
It was close to when we first met. I said, I go back home every once in a while if you want to need a ride or something.
And I said, oh, thank you. And then we happened to meet at the traffic light at the corner to walk back to school a couple times. And that's how we really connect, like, oh, we're in calculus together. So
were those meetings planned? Or were they nearly happenstantial?
Well, the first one was planned, and then after that, it was yes.
And we fell in love within a month.
Wow.
Very fast.
Wow.
I was in a fraternity, and so I realized real quickly that I'd rather be with hang out with her than the frat guy. So the fraternity kind of went.
He was not really meant to be in a fraternity. He wasn't one of those crazy rebel rousing guys that goes drinking and partying. So it really wasn't a good fit for him to be there anyway.
I think he chose the better option.
Me too.
So you fell. What do you mean when you say you fell in love in about a month?
So we met, let's just say, the first week of January when the winter session of school started. And we knew it was like an unspoken thing. We were really feeling obviously attracted to each other, and we had so much in common. And
there was chemistry.
Yeah. And, but we would not want to say, I love you. That would be way too soon to say, I love you. And then, but it was kind of like, well, Valentine's is coming up. And
I pretty much knew she was something special. So I, went and bought a ring, and, on Valentine's Day, I gave her a ring and told her I loved her. And so in that moment, it was kind of like, we knew
was it an engagement ring or just
no,
a ring?
No, it was just a
pretty ring.
Yeah. It was
just a
token of affection.
Right, yes.
Right. And, but we kind of knew it was hard to, but we wanted to honor our values. And, that was hard. Obviously kids have premarital sex and stuff, and that mm-hmm. was real important to us to stay pure before our marriage. So the whole thing was that we need to get married right away. And it was almost like we wanted to get married soon, but I didn't want to give the impression to her mom and dad that
was the only reason.
Well, I wanted to put across that I was responsible, you know, mm-hmm. so I wanted to prove myself more or less. So that was kind of something that I'd say, no, we need to wait. And Becky said, no.
Was the one, why do we have to wait?
So how long did you guys wait until you got married after that Valentine's Day?
We were married October 30th that same year.
Wow.
So we were afraid to tell our mom and dad until like June, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. How would you describe falling in love?
It was just wonderful, magical. I don't know how to describe.
I think what I kind of highlighted on waiting made it more special. I think as things progressed, it was like saving something special. So when it happened, it was the best, you know? Mm. So.
And neither one of us had dated a lot of other mm-hmm. people. So it was really special when we found somebody who was so like-minded in so many ways. You know, they have eHarmony now where you can, you know, put down all the answers to all these questions and they help find somebody. We had that without eHarmony. It was just like, it was a gift. It was a gift from God for sure. We mm-hmm. totally give him all the credit for what we have. Yeah. So don't take it lightly.
Did you involve God a lot in your courtship then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Why was that so important to you, and how did you go about doing that?
Well, God is the whole basis in a pyramid. It's God and then the two of us, and we wanted to give him, we knew that was what was going to make our marriage strong and keep it strong mm-hmm. in our relationship. And so we prayed together and we tried to find a church that we both enjoyed and that we would learn. And we just made that the
priority,
the cornerstone in our marriage, that was just a given is what we were going to do. And then once we had our daughters, we brought them into that too, and always included in God and everything. And we still do.
Why does involving God or religion in your relationship make it more stronger than it may be otherwise?
I think a lot of putting God first is to diminish self. Mm-hmm. And in the process, you're honoring your spouse in the fact that if you don't have yourself primary. You're more giving to the other person. And then if it's a reciprocal arrangement, I mean, it just creates harmony. I mean, usually, obviously there's no perfect, you're always going to have issues, you know, right. Obviously if you don't have disagreements, I mean, you're not human.
Right. You know? So absolutely.
I think it's how you handle those disagreements that makes the huge difference. So
that's absolutely true. We've interviewed over 40 couples now, and there's no such thing as a couple that doesn't disagree at one point or another. And have, you know, there's conflict, but it is how you go about resolving that conflict that I think really separates the super happy couples from the ones who are maybe not so happy together, or mm-hmm. the ones that end.
One key thing I know before we had started this, you were saying, think of things that might contribute to others in a relationship. But one of the things we kind of made firm right from the beginning is that we decided that never use the word divorce. I mean, that wasn't an option. Kind of like you heard, there was a story I heard that the explorers that came to America, their leader burnt their ship, mm-hmm. you know, after they got ashore, and they were just like, what's that all about? And he says, there's no retreat. We're going to make this work no matter what, you know?
How do you think that shaped your marriage? I mean, because I think for a lot of people, even for me before I went into this project, I feel so horrible saying this, but like I really did think, well, if it doesn't work out with somebody, like I can always just get divorced. And it's just so commonplace, you know, to think about it as an option now. So what would you say to people out there who are thinking about getting into a relationship or are in one and kind of use divorce as like a threat or almost like a safety net?
Well, one thing is, just recently, Mike and I started being marriage counselors for an organization called Marriage Team. Mm. And all of a sudden I'm having a senior moment. My mind just went and everything left my mind.
That's okay.
I have senior moments all the time.
Oh, so, okay, Mike, help me out here. So, go ahead, help me out.
Well, some of the couples we've counseled, divorce ended up being their option. Mm-hmm. And it seemed that the pain involved in the aftermath of after they made that decision was just unimaginable to them, I think, and before they went that route. And that I think the two people in the couple can actually find a way to resolve the conflict that they're involved in, it's going to be a lot less painful than actually going through some of the debris and everything that just gets thrown at them in the process. I mean, it gets really ugly. Mm-hmm. And I think statistically, when people that I've heard that, if they can stick through a marriage, within a certain amount of years, usually the issues that were causing such conflict in the first place they've completely got through that, you know, so a lot of times people are just so focused on the present that they can't see the future, mm-hmm. and they don't see any hope of getting through it. And if they just stick with it, and actually put some effort into it, the rewards are much greater.
Mm. What's been just kind of one source of conflict in between your marriage, and how did you get through it?
Okay. My theory is our biggest source of conflict was child rearing, because I was more lenient and he was a little stricter, and just trying to stay a team and not, you know, how like one child will come to you and say, Mom, can I? And Mom says yes, and Dad had already said no, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And just, I don't know, that was probably, there was a time frame where that was our biggest conflict, I think.
Mm-hmm. How did you guys resolve that? I'm just curious how you, like, when you were in that time of, essentially your kids learn, I did this as a kid, you learn to pit your parents against each other when Dad says no, ask Mom, or, you know. So how did you guys find like a resolution or a common ground?
I can't think of anything specific, but I know there's a resource that I am like on fire for, and it's a organization called Focus on the Family, and they have guest speakers and resources that address a lot of the issues that couples and parents have, and that was a great help. And when the kids were growing up, a lot of times I'd get them involved in some of the speakers that would come up, and it definitely helped. Mm-hmm. In different stages of their lives, like in entering adolescence or whatever. It was great.
It still is.
And it still
out
is.
Out there
is
a resource if you have a marriage issue, if you've lost your spouse, if your children have any sort of illnesses. It's all there. You can just call the 1-800.
Or their website.
Is it 1-800-4-FAMILY?
A family.
And awesome. Get all
we'll,
sorts of
We'll
help.
Link to their website in the blog when
yeah,
we publish this.
It's wonderful.
Very cool. So what would you say are some of the contributing factors, like the biggest contributing factors to you guys having a really happy, healthy, lasting marriage? I mean, you had this awesome chemistry when you first started dating, you fell in love, but that kind of Twitter passion doesn't necessarily carry you for 37 years. So
yes.
What is it that you guys really attribute to the success of your marriage? Like, what tips would you give people if they wanted to have a marriage like yours?
Well, personally, I just love being with Becky. I mean, she's like, if I had a choice to be with Becky and anybody else, I'd obviously want to be with her. I think that's pretty huge. I mean,
and we're a team. We've always been a team. And people can tell that we're different. We have a lot of people that can really tell that we really love each other. Mm-hmm. Even the neighbors, we're outside. We do everything together. If he's outside and he has to be doing something in the yard, I'll find something to do. Because I'm supporting him and I'm always there. I mean, I'm the weaker spouse, but I'm holding the bag for him to scoop the leaves or helping him hold whatever. We're just together. And our neighbors have said, you're the couple that does everything together.
I think a big thing is to build up each other's self-esteem too and encourage them. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, because everybody needs someone to be there to build you up, you know, mm-hmm. and if you find that in your spouse, it goes a long way.
Yes. And I always want the best for him. I love him so much. I would obviously give my life for him, and I just want the best for him in any way. Things that I can do as a wife to support him, whether that's just building him up and telling him how wonderful he is. And I thank him all the time for going to, I don't work anymore, and thank him for getting up and going to work for me. And, you know, some women would balk at the thought of serving their husband, but I enjoy that, you know, and it's been that way. So he likes it too. You know, it's just how we are, and it's how we show each other we care. I do for him here, and he gets up every morning and goes to work for me and opens the door for me still. And
we actually have fun too. And that makes a huge,
what kind of things do you guys do that are fun?
Well, for years I work nights. I'd go to work at 10 o'clock at night, get home the next morning at 11. And so it worked good because when I was up, when the kids were growing up, you know, I was able to wake up and carpool kids back and forth to school. And so I really, and by the time they were going to go to bed, I'd go to work. So it worked out really well. And, we'd do notes with each other. Like we had a like a little stuffed animal, and it was our little monkey.
I love monkey.
Yeah, and he'd always make him do funny things and have notes, holding notes, and have him in different poses, and it'd be a kind of a love thing, you know. And I'd set it on her pillow at night, so when she did go to bed after I left, she'd have something fresh, you know. And
the love monkey.
Yeah.
We've actually passed those on. Our kids have, Allison and David have one, and our other daughter, and we've given some to friends and other young people when they've got married. We've given them.
And he's gone on trips all around the world with us, and so he's got pictures on the Great Wall of China and the Eiffel Tower, you know, all these places. And so it's kind of, he's quite the
world traveler. Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, we just made it fun, yeah.
And we also, then it kind of evolved, and we would talk on the phone, and I'd say, when you call me tonight, I want a Western cowboy to greet me. And then he, you know, we're just silly. We are silly, which is nice to be able to laugh and just be silly. So he'd call me and talk in his funny little Western voice.
We won't make you do a demonstration.
And we, you know, we just still do silly things like that.
I feel like a lot of what you're saying is something that we've been hearing more and more. And it's sometimes it's something specific, but other times it's just a feeling that you get that two people just genuinely are for each other. Mm-hmm. You know, they're on each other's team. And something that I've realized in doing this project is that I've become almost a little positively jaded, because I keep hearing like the great stories and I'm sort of forgetting the not so great stories. But I feel like there are a lot of people out there who don't approach their relationships or their marriages like that. You know, like it's sort of like you go into an argument to win, or, you know, you are always looking to kind of get your way in a scenario, like, you know, trying to prove your point and say that your parenting style is better than the other person's. So that leads me to the question, what do you think is different? You know, like, what does it take for someone to be prepared to go into a marriage with that kind of heart? Do you think it's just kind of the way that people are born, or do you think it's something that you can do to get ready? Or is it about just like finding the right person who enables you to do that?
I guess part of that was where I was going with this marriage team, was that they have counseling classes premarital before you get married, and they cover all these different aspects mm-hmm. of marriage, financial, you know, not just the sexual side and what's going to happen when you have children, and, you know, all of these questions that some people never even think about. Mm-hmm. And so it's prepares you ahead of time for what you're in store for, and if you need to have some discussions before you know, actually really do get married. Mm-hmm. What was the question?
I made it really long and complicated, but it really, like, the simple version of it is, when you think about, or, you know, any couples that you know who haven't stayed together or maybe don't have as healthy a marriage, what are the individual qualities about the both of you that enable you to have the kind of relationship that's different, where you're both so on each other's team versus kind of going back and forth? Or,
well, we definitely, like he said, that it's a selfless relationship. Yeah. And since we purposely, it's not hard for us to say we want to be together. Some people, maybe it is, but there's one couple that I'm thinking of in particular, that he was a lawyer and she had a job in the radio industry, and they were just had their own things they were doing, and they would get together for the kids, but without, after that just wasn't enough. And he was doing his thing and she was doing her thing, instead of choosing, if you have time, not to be with other people, but to be with each other.
I think it boils down to love is a decision. And if it's something that you don't decide to make an effort, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. No matter how great your relationship is at first, if you don't work at it, it's kind of like a muscle in your body. I mean, if you got a great muscle, but you never work mm-hmm. to maintain that, it's going to atrophy, you know, so.
Do you think I know you guys met really young, but if you had to kind of guess, do you think that you become ready when you meet the right person, or do you meet the right person when you're ready?
Yeah. I think that brings up to mind that some people are like so anxious to get to where they want to be that sometimes they don't use common sense. It's like, I want a guy and I don't care, you know, if it's going to, you know, and my mom had a very hard relationship, and she got married for all the wrong reasons. And she was somewhat in poverty, and this guy was going to be her answer to get her, you know, a new life. And it was just had tragic results. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure that happens quite a bit, you know, that they marry for all the wrong reasons. And don't see the warning flags or the caution signs or whatever. And they just kind of run right through it because in their mind, all that matters is what they think they're going to get out of their relationship without actually thinking things through logically. So, 'cause emotions can take over and it can take you places you really don't want to go.
If you could both write a letter to yourselves, so like you to your younger self and you to your younger self the day that you got married, what would the letter say?
My goodness. Dear Becky.
It's a great start. It's a phenomenal start.
You think that you love this man more than anything in the whole world, but I can tell you now that I'm older that you're going to love him even more than you do now. How is that even possible? How's that possible?
How is that possible?
I don't know. It's amazing when you first get married to someone and you think he's my everything. That's the naive side, obviously, think he can't be my everything. But I certainly felt he was my, you know, I just loved him so much. How could I possibly love him more? But as you spend more time and you grow, obviously, we're not the same people we were then. Not at all. And there's things about him I had no clue. I didn't know about him. I had no idea what a Mr. Fix-It he was. That's what every woman needs in a man is a Mr. Fix-It. Allison, our daughter,
a Mrs. Fix-It.
Wrote a whole list of all the things. I don't know if she told you that. I don't know what you talked about. Of what she wanted in a spouse. And she wanted someone that could play the guitar, and David can play the guitar. No, she really did. She wrote a whole list of the things that were important to her.
Right, her ideal for a husband.
Yeah, ideal for a husband. Mm. It's pretty cute. We didn't go that far. We just knew. But all I can say is I am just amazed at what a wonderful man my Michael is. And I had no idea how good he was. I knew he was good, but I had no idea how good he was.
Jackpot.
Yeah. Except for, can I tell him his one flaw? Is that all right?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. He doesn't come to the table on time. We've been working on it.
She just laid down the gauntlet.
I know.
We've been working on this, and I think, yes, he's getting it. And then goes right back to the ways. That's so funny. I like my food hot.
I guess at the end of the day, if that's your biggest struggle,
I know.
You're doing pretty well.
I'm doing pretty good.
I give you guys an A+. Mike, what would your letter say?
I'd say, Mike, you have no idea, but your future wife is going to be way more than you think she is. And I go right down the same route that Becky just took. It's like there's so many things about Becky that I had no idea. I mean, she's so efficient. I mean, it's like amazing. She runs circles around most people.
I'm gonna cry right now.
and she's the kind of person that is always there to build me up. It's just, which is huge. And that makes, when things are tough, it takes me a long way. So I'd say, go for it.
Go for it.
Do you have any moments from your past that you reflect on that, like, as a couple, like, do you ever just think back to a certain moment? You're like, oh man, I'm so glad I had that moment with Becky. Like, that was such an amazing. I find myself reminiscing on childhood memories, like certain friends, and just remembering certain instances. Like, I wonder what, it always makes me wonder what some of those instances are in a couple's relationship.
I think there's been high times. I mean, when we had our first baby, that was just like the best. Just to be able to see new life and know that it came from you, you know, it's just like amazing. And, all that and what that entailed. And, that was huge. Of course there's always high points, you know, when you get your first really good job and you think, oh, this is great. And you get your first new house and it's like, and then obviously when we go through the low points, that really tests your love for each other and put some glue in your relationship. Mm-hmm. We had some hard times when Becky was diagnosed with diabetes. That was huge. We had to work through that. That's one thing I can say about her. She's a real warrior. She does everything she can to battle with through that. And
what was that like, learning that the person you love most in the world had this serious illness?
Yeah, it was obviously, you, when you have something special, you don't want to risk losing it. And right. that always loomed big in the background, you know, so.
He's very supportive and helpful. Yeah, very.
What's something that surprised you about marriage? Just making, you know, kind of the logistics of marriage, something that you didn't really think you'd have to do to make it work, or?
I don't ever feel like we've been very fortunate. We don't have to make it work. It's mm-hmm. always just worked. When I was very confused when I hear people say, oh, the first year of marriage is so hard. And I'm like, I don't know what they're talking about. What's hard? It's not hard. It's great. Really, I didn't get it until later. Like, oh, for some people it is hard.
It's like, I've always slept on the right side of the bed. I want, you know, it's like, no, I've always slept, you know, it's like a lot of those same things. It's not a real big deal to me or you or whatever. Right. And it's like, it was really easy to compromise and say, well, why don't we just talk this out? It's like, which was more important to you? You want to do that? And it's like,
I don't even think we talked anything out. It just kind of happened.
Oh, man, you guys are so lucky.
I don't remember us saying, well, what should we do here? No, it just happened.
That's kind of special.
It is.
I want some of your magic to rip off on me. That's funny.
I think of kind of one nice thing about it is that we've both took on our roles, and it wasn't like, mm-hmm. no, I want to do that, or whatever her strengths were. It complemented my weaknesses. You know what I'm saying? So she does the finances, and money is huge, obviously. And we both had the same goals. It's like, we're kind of savers and a little bit on the frugal side. Mm-hmm. So, and we both feel the same mindset. I mean, I can't imagine, but cause I've seen fallout, but there, when people marry opposites in the financial part, I was like, that can really be hard. Mm-hmm. You know, if you marry someone that's a spender and you're a saver, it's like, wow, that's something you really have to, mm-hmm. obviously counseling or whatever, that would probably help you come and meet in the middle somewhere. So, mm-hmm. but yeah, we're pretty blessed in that area. Yeah. So.
I was just thinking, it's probably worse if you have a spender and a spender together.
Yeah.
That's probably really bad.
And then they wake up one morning, oh no, what have we done?
Oh my goodness.
That's funny.
So you guys have grandkids now?
Yes.
When they get a little bit older and they start dating and What do you hope, you know, when they come running to their grandparents for advice?
Hopefully that doesn't happen at the last minute. I mean, I think the key to having your children that you love get on the right track is that you kind of plant seeds from when they're really small, and so that then they don't wake up one day and it's like, we need to have a talk. It's like, it's kind of in their DNA, you know, to make wise decisions.
You talk to them as you're driving to school. You talk to them at the dinner table. You talk to them while you're playing games, while you're taking baths, whatever you're doing. So it's not, you know, which is about, we talked with our girls about boys and sex from when they were just, you know, 6 years old, 5 years old.
On their level.
On their level, yes. And so it was never really embarrassing to us to all talk about things because we did it when they were little. So it was just part of life.
That's such a healthy perspective. I'd be so curious to interview your parents and be like, how did they listen to you? Because, you know, there are some truisms about relationships that really aren't that true. Like, the first year of marriage is really hard. And so I think all of a sudden, because people say it and it's commonplace to say it, it becomes the truth. You almost expect, I think a lot of people go into marriage expecting that the first year is going to be really hard. And then it often is made harder than it needs to be. So I'm just like, I keep thinking that, like, when we go into interviews, there was one couple that we interviewed. They were lovely. They were like, being married is like a 24/7 slumber party. You know, like, you just, like, it doesn't take work. Like, marriage isn't work. I mean, there's effort involved in, you know, being together, but I wouldn't call it work, similar to what you said. And the guy was like, you know, it's just like a 24/7 slumber party. Like, you know, you want to spend the whole day with them, and then they don't have to go home at night. Like, they can be there with you too. So I just thought that was, it's just so refreshing being in a room with couples like the two of you, because it just really helps solidify that you can just define and create whatever kind of marriage you want.
Yes. Well, you say you would like to interview our parents to see how we were raised, but we are nothing like our parents' marriages. I mean, his mom and dad divorced. He didn't have a role model in that when he was 7, and it wasn't anything good that he remembers in the past. Like, oh, but they did used to love each other. He never saw that. And my parents, they stayed married and they loved each other, but it's nothing like our marriage. I mean, they were a team, and you could tell they really did love each other, but there was a missing link in there compared to how our relationship is.
There was I think the biggest, like, I go back to the biggest resource that I gleaned tons of information is when, right after we were married, they at our church, they had a Focus on the Family film series, and it was over, was it over several nights? And there was, I don't know, 7 or 8 different installments, and he covered everything, all the topics, and was like, this guy is awesome. it was James Dobson, he's a doctor. And then he ended up having a website, and it was like, gosh, this is, you know, and it just was so enlightening. It's like, it just, when you hear something right and it just kind of like rings true, it's like, wow, that's good. I got to do that, you know, that kind of thing. And so, I probably am his one of the biggest cheerleaders, but yeah, it's pretty cool stuff. So
I'm definitely going to look him up after this.
So it seems to me like you guys both have an attitude of gratitude, if you will.
Oh, yes.
If I'm allowed to make that rhyme. What are some of the things that you're really grateful for in the other, in your spouse, that maybe they've sacrificed over the years, or the things that you just really, really appreciate them that have helped you become a better version of yourself?
Well, I'm very grateful that whatever I want to do, if I wanted to learn how to, I don't know, I all of a sudden my mind's a little bit blank. If I wanted to be a master gardener and I needed help digging the holes because I had to do this presentation and I had to have really large holes and it was too hard, and he would be out there in the rain digging those holes for me because he's supporting me. And anything I do, he's 100% backs me. Even though when I wanted to do toll painting and I started toll painting, which isn't very popular anymore, but it was, you know, a way it was back. And then I got to be good enough. I was teaching toll painting classes and we had a little scroll saw. He would be out there cutting wood for me. And do you think he wanted to be in the coal garage cutting wood? No, he did that to support me 100%. So I just love him for that.
Same goes for me. I mean, like Becky said earlier, if I'm out there in the yard, she'll just like, it's okay, babe. You can go back in the house. Like, no, I need to be out here helping you. Like, no, you really don't have to.
I'm so curious about when you were talking about your parents. What do you think the difference is between, you know, like the marriage or the love that your parents shared and the love that the two of you shared, where neither is wrong per se, but it's just a little bit different?
Well, I think one thing my mom said to me when she was first dating my dad, he's a quieter person, so to speak. He likes to read, and he was sitting at his parents' house on a little ledge reading a book and eating peanuts. And she was sitting next to him while he was reading his book, eating peanuts. It was a little bit, what do I want to say? Is it's more, she had more invested in the emotional side than he did. I don't know. It was just a little, it wasn't an even emotional.
He was a little bit more passive in the relationship.
Yeah, even like the whole passive in all aspects, the discipline. She was the disciplinarian. She was so the glue of the whole thing. I mean, lots of times the women are, but he was more in this world over here, and he would come together, you know, and meet up. But, you know, he was the Monday night football, Saturday football, not very, let's all be a family, or what about you? Surely you worked hard all week. What would you like to do? You know, it's all more about him, I think. But now my mom has passed away and my dad is still here. And what?
The peanut story. You were telling about, yes, the peanut story.
Yeah. And so go ahead.
You didn't finish.
What is the actual end?
Your dad was eating peanuts, yes, and she was next to him. Yes. So what happened through that?
Well, it's just that she just realized that, you know, she was with him, but he was in his own world doing his own thing. He was sitting there eating the peanuts, and her, you know, she wanted to be with him so bad, she would just sit there with him while he ate the peanuts. And that's a little bit of clue that maybe you need to talk a little bit more before you get married. Do we want the same things? Are we, you know, because really she probably could have found someone that was a little bit more like her.
Yeah. That's a great, great point. I understand what you're saying. Cause I come up against that a lot, where, a big thing I've realized from doing this project so far is, like, I used to kind of think that you just have to find a spouse who just perfectly fits, you know, your lifestyle and, you know, has the same set of interests, and that there was somehow this like perfect right person out there. And it was just really trial and error. And if you got lucky, you ran the trial and error fast enough and, you know, you found who you're supposed to be with. But I'm starting to realize that so much of it really is about the personal, like, work that it takes, or just as an individual, like how wholeheartedly do I go into a relationship, and do I really understand what commitment means? And, you know, am I viewing divorce as an option or am I not? And then being able to like find somebody who matches that openness, because I really do think from these stories, and this is just off of observation, not so much personal experience yet, but I can't even imagine how incredible a relationship could be if both people came into it that way. Even if not everything else is perfect, you know, like even if interests were different or goals were different, or I mean, I guess for the big goals and values, they need to be pretty aligned. But I kind of keep coming back to that, and I'm not sure it's what my heart tells me is the right answer. And I think having, especially for something I've noticed is that people who have faith, a faith base, and they make that the source of kind of like the priority, that that's also a huge kind of stability mechanism in relationships, because it really doesn't become about the two people. So it's just really interesting to hear, you know, you talk about both kinds of relationships, because I see it more and more. It's like, I, you know, you think you're constantly looking for the checklist in somebody else, and I'm starting to realize it's about the checklist for yourself, you know, like, mm-hmm. how do you want to come into being in a relationship? I think.
Yeah.
So Mike, a minute ago, you said something along the lines of the hardships that you go through act as kind of like the glue in your relationship. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Why do you think, I feel like a lot of times couples, when they go through a hardship, whether it be financial or health related or spiritual, it can often result in the demise of the relationship. So how can you turn a difficult situation into something that brings you closer together rather than something that tears you apart?
I think you have to go in initially into your relationship like there's no back door, and then you just press forward, and every time you go through a low spot and you've made it through there, it gives you confidence that the next hardship, if you made it through this one, you can make it through the next one. And it just, it's a building block kind of a thing. And no matter how hard things are, you just make sure, you know, you're going to be able to get through it. And when you do get through things, it gives you so much more strength to be able to take on whatever comes the next time.
Do you think your relationship would be as strong today were it not for the hardships that you've gone through? Or do you think that those hardships
I think we value it more, knowing that Becky's been there when I've needed her, and vice versa. I think that, I mean, it's hard to put a price on someone that's there when you need them, you know. It's just.
But we also, as you've talked about faith, every hardship, our Lord is right there with us, walking with us, and we don't take lightly that fact. And prayer is a huge part of all of that when you're in that valley. When you're in a high spot, I mean, praise Him for the good and the bad. And we would not be the couple we are if it wasn't for God.
How do your prayers change depending on when you're in a high spot or a low spot? Like, are they, I'm just interested, like, does the way that you pray or the things that you ask for, or the attitude that you have when you approach God in prayer change depending on if you're in a really low spot or a really high spot?
Oh, somewhat. I mean, sure, it's easy to plead, please, please, please answer my prayer. Mm-hmm. But it's also to relinquish to Him that He is in utmost control, and that His will be done. And He knows what the best for me. And sometimes it's hard. Like, I prayed to have that, can't take my diabetes away from me. But, you know, it is, everybody has trials. You know, I'm not the only one, and it is hard. It's a stinky disease to have. And, you know, but it is what it is, and He's in control. And I've helped many people because I have it, and I've been able to give them help because I'm going through it. So, you know.
So do you think prayer and like having God as the center of your relationship helps you look for the good in every situation, or the lesson, or some positive takeaway?
When you're weak, He's your strength, you know, and we all have our weaknesses, and it's always good to have a someone you can reach out to, you know. Yeah. So
I read this beautiful quote in a book that said, you know, we're always concerned with our external success. So whether it's like the perfection of a relationship or success at work or, you know, having a big house, and God's only concerned with the success of our hearts. So like, how does our heart strengthen as a result of the things that we go through, whether good or bad? And that one thing, I mean, even in those hard moments, I'm like, it just adds a lot of context, and color to some of the not so great stuff that happens, knowing that, success, I'm measuring success very differently than God is measuring my success.
I think there's an analogy where that steel only becomes strengthened when it goes through the fire.
The refiner's fire.
And I think that can play out in life as well.
Do you have any advice out there? So like, I know you guys are both marriage counselors, which is really cool. Do you have any advice out there for people who aren't there yet? Who maybe are just kind of looking to collect lessons and understanding about how to get into a loving relationship before they get to a point where they need to go to a marriage counselor? What would you say?
I think we kind of touched on it earlier, is to aspire to be the best you can be, and that try to search out someone that has the same motives. That's pretty nice to feel like there's someone that you know has your best interests and not necessarily always has their, you know, the reverse.
And where are you seeking this person? Is it in a bar? Is it at the library? Is it at your school's football game? I mean, there's places to meet someone who would probably more fit, be a good fit for you in a place where you would feel comfortable.
Right.
You know.
Does what you're, are you looking in the place where somebody that you want to be with would be?
Be, yes.
I also think that looking for someone that would be a life partner and not just have someone that just to have a fling with is huge. I think when you think of someone you want to be with the rest of your life, that should be your goal. Not necessarily, well, I'm going to just try this out for a day or two. And if, you know, I mean, search out someone with that goal in mind, if you're really serious about a long-term relationship, because,
Hollywood has done us no favors.
Yeah. Just hopping in and out of bed is not, is going to just pretty much leave a lot of heartache behind. I know there's instances that what's the lady's name that was a missionary and her husband was
Elizabeth Elliot.
She has she's wrote a book actually, and it sounds kind of like an extreme situation, but they fell in love in college, and he was dedicated to go onto the mission field down in the jungles of South America. And even though they were madly in love, he didn't feel the timing was right. And she waited for 5 years for him, and came back from the mission field. They were married, and she relates in the story that even something good is worth waiting for. And if you put discipline in it on the front end, it's going to give you more discipline to make it through the long run.
I think there's this common perception, especially with folks in their 20s and 30s, that when you get married, you lose freedom and you have to sacrifice and give up a lot of stuff. So what's the point in getting married if I don't have to do that if I'm single? So what would you tell people who are maybe thinking of marriage that way?
I don't think they're meant to be married.
So like for the both of you, what is the point of being married and the benefit of it?
there's some deep-seated peace in knowing that no matter what, I have someone that's my advocate and it's always going to be there for me. I mean, that's priceless. And not in the back of my mind think, wow, you know, if I do screw up or whatever, mess up, that she could just say, see you later, you know, I'm out of here. It's like, I don't know that there's, man, it just brings so much more happiness and joy to your life, knowing that you got a rock solid person that's always going to be there for you.
But you don't want to screw up. It's not like, I can screw up and she'll still be there. You want that person to be proud of you. Mm. And you wouldn't want to do anything to screw it up, you know, cause some people are like, she'll never know. Mm. Whatever. That's
so not only is there this like sense of you can rely on the person and they're always going to be there, but there's also a sense of like you're inspired to be the best version of yourself for that person.
Exactly.
That's really cool. It's like the best of both worlds.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Killer combination.
I want that.
Awesome. I was meaning to ask before the question just popped back into my head. I remember you saying that Becky always builds you up and I love the idea of that, like having somebody to build you up. But whenever there's a conflict or like, say there's a criticism, how are one or both of you able to like articulate your feeling and still not feel like you're putting the other person down? If that makes sense.
Well, a marriage team, there's a phrase, it's called I statements. Mm-hmm. When you put in context of the issue you're debating, you should always put it in an I statement, because when you put it in a you always, you're the other person's going to always be defensive, and so you want to take that away and not burden the other person.
I feel really sad when you don't come to the table.
This is a recurring theme.
When the food is hot.
I have a feeling you're going to make it on time to the table tonight.
Because I work hard to get it on the table in time, and it makes me feel not very loved when you don't come and eat it.
Maybe it's time to move dinner back a half hour.
So anyway, yes, I statements. But I will say, if this... We are certainly not perfect. I am more volatile than he is. He's much more even, and I'm the one that gets upset and I kind of holler, you know, and he's like the one to try to calm me down. And I want space when we have an argument and he wants to solve it. Like he's right there. Let's make up. Can I just have a few minutes? You know, and he's just right. He follows me wherever I go. And I'm like, I want a little space. So, you know, we don't paint the picture that we're certainly perfect, because we're not. We definitely have we argue over the stupidest things. Never anything big. It's not about money, about sex, about, I mean, what do people argue about? It's about stupid stuff. I can't even tell you one now, but they're really, really dumb.
Most people argue over really stupid stuff. I can attest to that.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
Well, we've about hit an hour. So unless you guys want to leave us with any parting words of wisdom.
Well, I think in a relationship, we haven't touched on it yet, but some of the things I gleaned from Focus is Gary Smalley actually is one of the guests on it that speaks a lot of this. It's called Finding Your Mate's Love Language. And some people, it's the gift of works, good works, and gift of getting gifts or giving mm-hmm. gifts or
physical touch.
Physical, I think it's one yes, of them. Physical touch. So you've heard that anyway. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty important to keep your relationship on track, because obviously if you're giving love, but it's not in the language of your mate. Mm-hmm. It's not doing what you want it to do.
Right.
It's not hitting the mark. So food for
tip.
Thought.
That's a good tip.
And another thing that we have learned is when you are arguing, that your spouse is not your enemy. So when you're so mad, and you got to remember, you're on the same team. They're not your enemy. You just need to figure out how to come to an agreement, or at least to be able to talk to each other about whatever it is without thinking the other one is going to, you know, it's not an arm wrestle. Mm-hmm. You're both on the same team. So that's really kind of big when you're right in the middle of an argument to remember that.
Yeah. It's a lot easier to remember in hindsight than when you're
Yes.
<there.
laughs> Yes.
Yeah. The emotion of the moment sometimes take you where you don't want to go, you know, and then Yes. It's like after the fact, it's like, why are we even arguing?
And that you really need to listen. That's part of the I statement thing, mm-hmm. is that the person says, I feel sad when you don't honor me by coming to the table when I say, and then the other person says, what I hear you saying is, you feel sad when I don't come when you call me because you went to all this trouble. Because we need to be better listeners.
Right. That's, it makes you feel more validated to have somebody tell you what you're telling them.
Yes.
Not that they understand.
And mostly I think it's just good to really hear people. Like, it's not so much for, I think that's when I always struggle. So we've talked a bit about the I and the repeating it back, and something about it always feels a little bit disingenuous to me, because I think there is this feeling of like, I know in my head it's a technique for getting someone to, you know, and I think there's a fine line between communicating well and manipulation. And like using it as a way to get somebody to kind of do what you want just by subtly changing your language. But something I've realized is just like the important thing is to really just hear people. Because so many times, I mean, I do this a lot. I think everybody does. Someone will be talking and you're already prepping your response in your head. Mm-hmm. So you're like getting ready to say whatever you need mm-hmm. to say. But you're not really hearing them. Mm-hmm. And like by listening, like not just understanding and processing the words they're saying, but like listening for the meaning behind why they say what they say and why they feel what they feel. Mm-hmm. And it's like that extra 5 seconds mm-hmm. of just genuinely listening before you just go and say your piece.
Yeah. I also heard that a 10-second kiss once a day is very good therapy for your relationship.
I believe that.
And the touch, the sense of touch in the middle of a discussion also gives you that extra calming.
Yeah. Physical touch is mm-hmm. one of my main love languages. I even with my friends, I find that I'm always mm-hmm. like reaching over mm-hmm. to them. So it is really huge. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Okay.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yes.
This is great. Good being with you.
Thanks for tuning in. Join us next week when we talk to another amazing couple about love and relationships and wonderful things. And in the meantime, go give somebody a lovely compliment, because everybody loves compliments and you feel good when you give them. Just for you, in case you were wondering, you're pretty remarkable and I love you.